Welcome to the Messianic Message. I'm Kimberly Rogers Brown.
Okay. Abba Father, I thank you that you have called us to keep your Sabbath and to learn about you and to draw us closer to you and help us to understand your ways so that we may come to your kingdom. And I just pray that everything that you say will come back fruitful, and everything that I say will come back void. In Yeshua's name, amen. So starting at Deuteronomy 5:1, we have Moses, who has been through the history now, the past four chapters. He's been through the history of the 40 years in the wilderness with the people, and he's lectured in the last chapter the people on the use of images. And now we will begin the segment wherein he is renewing the covenant that was given from Exodus 20 to 24 with that first generation. So Moses brings the same scenario here as when the original covenant was made in Exodus 19, in which at that point he called the people to hear what Yahweh had to say. Now in Exodus 19, he said, if you will be my people, I will be your God, and so forth. But there was a piece of that that got left out, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. Verse 3, Moses says, Yahweh did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us, who are all of us here alive today. Well, it lends itself, if you don't know about Deuteronomy 29:15, that perhaps this covenant was only made with that first and that second generation and did not involve us. But it does involve us, because in Deuteronomy 29:15, it says this covenant is made with him that stands here with us today before Yahweh, our Elohim, and also him that is not here with us this day, meaning the future generations. So we are all beholden to this book of the law. And here in verse 4, Moses tells them that, quote unquote, they were face to face with Yahweh on the mountain. Now, some of them were. They were children, but most of them were not face to face. Yet he says that we were. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 10 that we are to regard our fathers as having gone through the Red Sea, meaning that not only did they go through the Red Sea, but our fathers were at the mountain, which means we were also at the mountain. That's an idiomatic way of saying we've all been face to face with Yahweh on the mountain. In verse 5, it says that they were afraid of Yahweh's words. And I will submit to you that we today are still afraid of Yahweh's words. We stand at Mount Sinai just like that first generation, and we have that same reaction that I'm going to talk about here in a minute. But in verse 6, we begin to have a reiteration of the same covenant that was given in Exodus 20, starting in Exodus 20. And first up on the covenant is that you know who brought you out of Egypt. So now let's compare what Exodus 20 says to what Deuteronomy 5:6 says. Deuteronomy 5:6 says, I am Yahweh, your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Exodus 20, verse 2 says, I am Yahweh, your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You see, we're having an exact repeat here, because if you don't know who brought you out of bondage, you are not going to stand a very good chance of obeying this one and sticking with him, you see. In Deuteronomy 5:7, you shall have no other gods before me. In Exodus 20, verse 3, you shall have no other gods before me. In Deuteronomy, verse 8, you shall not make a carved image for yourself, any likeness of what is in heaven above, or what is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Again, we're going back to the original commandment. In Exodus 20, verse 4, You shall not make for yourselves a carved image, nor any image of anything that is in the heavens above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Truly, this is a renewal, a reiteration. In verse 9, you shall not bow yourself down to them, nor serve them. For I, Yahweh, your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, and on the third and on the fourth generation of those who hate me. Exodus 20, verse 5. You shall not bow yourself down to them, nor serve them. I, Yahweh, your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. Verse 10. And showing loving kindness to those who love me and keep my commandments. Exodus 20, verse 6. And showing loving kindness to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. Deuteronomy 5:11. You shall not take the name of Yahweh your God in vain, for Yahweh will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Exodus 20, verse 7. You shall not take the name of Yahweh your God in vain, for Yahweh will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Deuteronomy 5:12. And Exodus 20, verse 8 are exactly the same. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. But then here in Exodus 5:12, Moses inserts an editorial. He says, as Yahweh your God commanded you. Now that as Yahweh your God commanded you is not in Exodus 20, verse 8. So why has Moses added his editorial comment here? Well, because this is one of the things that the Israelites have not done properly as a congregation. You remember Zelophehad in Deuteronomy 5:13? It says, you shall labor 6 days and do all your work. In Exodus 20, verse 9, it says, you shall labor 6 days and do all your work. Deuteronomy 5:14, it says, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to Yahweh your God in which you shall not do any work. You, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your ox, nor your donkey, nor any of your livestock, nor your stranger who is within your gates, nor your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. Well, in Exodus 20, verse 10, it ends with, nor your stranger who is within your gates. It was Moses who adds here that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. Now that to me is a hint that they've had strangers among them since they came out of Egypt, and some of them are not letting their female and male servants rest on the Sabbath day. So Moses is here telling them, listen up, folks. Everybody rests on the Sabbath. Deuteronomy 5:15. And you shall remember that you were a servant in the land of Egypt, and Yahweh your God brought you out of there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, Yahweh your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Well, in Exodus 20, verse 11, it says, for in 6 days Yahweh made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. And therefore Yahweh blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. But in Deuteronomy 5:15, Moses heads on over to that you shall remember that you were a servant in the land of Egypt. Again, we don't get this in the account of the children of Israel, but you can maybe come to the conclusion that these people were not remembering what it was like for them in Egypt, and that the strangers among them were being treated like they had been treated in Egypt. In other words, the oppressors, or the oppressed rather, became the oppressors. And so Moses is wanting them to understand compassion. Put yourself back in Egypt. You know, what was it like for your parents who were in Egypt? You've probably had 40 years of hearing those stories. So if you're doing that to your male and female servant and you're not letting them rest on the Sabbath and you're overworking them during the other 6 days, stop it. Don't do that. You know, you were in Egypt, so don't treat people like they're in Egypt. This is not Egypt. Deuteronomy 5:16. Honor your father and your mother as Yahweh your God commanded you, that your days may be long and it may go well with you in the land which Yahweh your God gives you. Exodus 20 verse 12. Honor your father and your mother that your days may be long in the land which Yahweh your God gives you. Now, again, Moses adds, as Yahweh your God commanded you. Again, reminding this generation that these have been commanded before and they are now being renewed. This is the covenant renewal. We've had the history and the reason why you don't, and a whole chapter, a whole diatribe of why you don't be making images, you know, why you don't be dealing with images. And now we're having the covenant renewal. You see, you didn't have to have that before with the covenant. The Lord just went into the covenant with the people and gave them the commandments. But now in this renewal, the reminder is, if you hadn't been involved in those images, we would not now be doing this. You see? So in Deuteronomy 5:17, it says, you shall not murder. Exodus 20:13, you shall not murder. My goodness, Kimberly. Deuteronomy 5:18, you shall not commit adultery. Exodus 20, verse 14, you shall not commit adultery. Deuteronomy 5:19, you shall not steal. Exodus 20:15, you shall not steal. Deuteronomy 5:20, you shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. Exodus 20, verse 16, you shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. And Deuteronomy 5:21, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, neither shall you desire your neighbor's house, his field, or his male servant, or his female servant, his ox, or his donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's. Exodus 20, verse 17. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. So far, we've seen pretty much verbatim, almost, you know, 99% verbatim of what happened at the mountain. In verse 22, Yahweh spoke these words to all your assembly on the mountain out of the middle of the fire, of the cloud, and of the thick darkness with a great voice. He added no more. He wrote them on the two stone tablets and gave them to me. Now, Moses is recounting what happened after Yahweh spoke those 10 words, those 10 dabar. Dabar is the Hebrew word for word. We also use it to say these are the 10 commandments. They're not called commandments. That's a religious thing that's put on them. They are the 10 dabar or debarim, the 10 words, and they are actually decrees. And these decrees summarize the nature of the covenant with Israel, with the congregation, and what kind of kingdom this is going to be. Everything in that covenant is something that's, there's a different something. Every one of those, what we call commandments, is different than what is done in the world. That's what sets Israel apart from all other nations. So we need to keep that in mind, because that's what he says later on in our Deuteronomy study. We're going to find out that that's what he said. This is our righteousness and our wisdom and our understanding. And the other nations will say, whoa, those people are really wise. See, to use the modern. Okay, nobody's laughing. All right, I'm the only one that thought that was funny. You know, y'all are all a tough room. but also notice that Moses did not receive the tablets before the people backed away from the mountain. Here, Moses is kind of summarizing what happened in this one couple of sentences. But we know from the story in Exodus that they backed away and they asked him to go get the information, and then he went and got the tablets. But here he's just saying that the Lord gave him the information. And because Yahweh gave him the stone tablets, we have laid on Moses that this is the law of Moses. And that also is, it's idiomatic, but it's kind of not really the whole truth. The whole truth is that Yahweh wrote this law, had this law already from the foundation of the world, from before anything was created, this law existed when there wasn't a Moses. And so we come up short when we call it the law of Moses, because it sounds like it's just the law of another man. And it's not. It's Yahweh's law. In Deuteronomy 5:23, it says, "When you heard the voice out of the middle of the darkness, while the mountain was burning with fire, you came near to me, even all the heads of your tribes and your elders." And in verse 24, you said, "Behold, Yahweh our God has shown us his glory and his greatness, and we have heard his voice out of the middle of the fire. We have seen today that God does speak with man and he lives." Well, here's actually what Moses wrote about the very first time in Exodus 20, verse 18. "All the people perceived the thunderings, the lightnings, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountain smoking. When the people saw it, they trembled and stayed at a distance." The people did not say in Exodus 20, 18, that Yahweh had shown them his glory and greatness. But Yahweh, or Moses rather, is here telling us that that is exactly what Yahweh was showing to the people, that the people that backed up away from Yahweh were seeing his glory and his greatness. They chose to back away rather than to stand in awe. And Moses also tells us here, even though this is not exactly what happened the first time or what was said the first time, was that the people actually heard God's voice and lived. Now, you have to ask yourself, should they have been surprised that they heard God's voice and lived? I mean, their father Jacob had wrestled body to body with God and had seen God face to face and lived. So why should they have been surprised that Yahweh showed himself or to him in audio, you know, that they would hear him and live? Now, I want to bring up another aspect of this, because here I've just pointed out the discrepancies, a couple discrepancies between the Exodus 20 account and the Deuteronomy 5 account. And some people will say that this discrepancy or these discrepancies discredit either this section or Moses. Maybe somebody else wrote this instead of Moses, or they'll discredit the whole Bible, depending upon how far they want to go. Years ago, I learned that the Bible does not have to be precise in order to be true. And there are times, like when a parent will have given instruction to a child and then the child disobeys or seems to not understand, that the parent will repeat the original instruction and then add additional insight to that instruction. But that doesn't make the parent a liar in the first case or the second case. So neither do these differences in the account make Moses a liar in the first case in Exodus 20 or in Deuteronomy chapter 5. In Exodus 20:19, the people said to Moses, "Speak with us yourself and we will listen, but don't let God speak with us lest we die." And here in Deuteronomy 5:25, it mentions that this great fire will consume us. Well, if we hear Yahweh, our God's voice anymore, then we shall die. Isn't it interesting that his voice is equated with fire? Yeah, I just haven't really seen that before today. But the original account in Exodus 20, verse 19, does not include the words, "For this great fire will consume us." But Moses is here conveying the meaning behind the fear that the people had at the mountain back there the first time. Deuteronomy 5:26, "For who is there of all flesh that has heard the voice of the living God speaking out of the middle of the fire as we have and lived?" Exodus 20:20 said, Moses said to the people, "Don't be afraid, for God has come to test you, that his fear may be before you, that you won't sin." Excuse me. Deuteronomy 5:27, "Go near." So in Exodus 20, we don't have the account of Moses saying, "Go near and hear all that Yahweh your God has to say to you." The people are saying to Moses, "Go near to God and hear all that Yahweh our God shall say to you." They don't want to hear. They don't want to be near to God. That's very telling about that generation. In Exodus 20, verse 21, it says the people stayed at a distance and Moses came near to the thick darkness where Yahweh was. "Yahweh heard the voice of your words when you spoke to me, and Yahweh said to me, 'I've heard the voice of the words of this people, which they have spoken to you. They have well said in what they have spoken.'" Why did Yahweh say the people had spoken well? Well, because he was verifying that he knew, that they knew, that they were not fit to be in his presence. See, being in Yahweh's presence requires us to have a personal relationship with him, which they did not have yet. And that was the reason that Moses was supposed to speak to the rock of their salvation that followed them in the wilderness. And that would have taught them to speak to the rock. And then they would have developed a personal relationship with the Lord, which would then have alleviated the fear that they had about God's power and glory, and that coming near to him could kill them. And if you're not fit to come in his presence, his power and glory can kill you. Remember Nadab and Abihu? Verse 29, "Oh, that there was such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it might be well with them and their children forever." This is Yahweh's lament. He knows that if we keep his commandments, everything will be well with us and with our children. So, "Oh, that Yahweh's people would always be able to hear and reverence and be in awe of him while having their personal relationship with him." Now, sometimes I think about Yahweh's awesome power, and I have to admit that I get a twinge of this fear. And that is as it should be. You know, sometimes when we think about who we are in relationship with, it's a good thing to have that little of, you know, like, I get it. I'm this tall and you are not even tall. You are like beyond what I can understand. So that should keep us in line. It teaches me that my relationship with him is actually at his behest, not mine. I cooperate with having the relationship with him, but it really depends on, you know, am I going to obey him or not? And therein lies the rub for the first generation at Mount Sinai. I think their fear was more about not liking the terms of the agreement that they agreed to before they heard what he had to say. You see, they heard what he had to say, and he was, you know, very loud, and there was lots of light show going on, rumbling and thunder and lightning and fire and all that stuff going on. And they're like listening to that and, whoa, we didn't sign up for this. Okay. The smart thing for them to have done would have been to get a copy of the terms and go over them before signing on the bottom line, before agreeing. But they committed themselves and all future generations to the covenant without knowing the terms. So they might not have liked the terms, and on top of it, they saw how he actually does have the power to enforce his covenant. You see, there's not going to be anybody that can come along and rescue you from this guy. You know, there's nobody that can come and do to him what he did to Pharaoh in Egypt. Oh, no. Once we're in covenant with this one, oh, we can't now go to the Hittites and say, we don't like this guy. We can't go to the Amorites and say, you know, we don't like the setup over here. Let's get in covenant with you. And think that put the Hittites and the Amorites together against Yahweh. That's not going to happen. And that's the power that they were afraid of, the power to hold them accountable. And it caused them to back away. They backed away from the covenant, and they backed away from the personal relationship with Yahweh. And then later, Moses reinforced the no relationship at the rock when he struck the rock. In verse 31, it says, but as for you, stand here by me, and I will tell you. The Lord is talking to Moses. I will tell you all the commandment and the statutes and the ordinances which you shall teach them, that they may do them in the land which I give them to possess. The reason the book of the law called Deuteronomy comes with blessings and curses that were not given prior to now is because the blessings and curses apply only to them in the land. Now, you may be asking me, why then is it that Yahweh's people from that time forward to today are liable? And so you're saying, Kimberly, that before they went into the land, they were not liable for the blessings and curses. Yes, that's what I'm saying. So why is it that after they go on into the land and then for all future generations, we are liable even though we're outside the land? We're liable and we're beholden to keep the entire Torah, including the commandments that as much as we can toward the land, and toward the tabernacle and the temple and all that as much as we're able to do while we're in exile. How is that? Well, the reason is because once the children of Israel went into the land, they forever indexed or connected them and all future generations to the land. Joshua built an altar there. In Joshua 8, verse 30, and they stood between Mount Ebal and Gerizim and swore what they were going to do. They were going to abide by the blessings and the curses in the land. Guess what that did? Just like back there at Exodus 20 to 24. Now future generations are beholden to that covenant. When our forefathers stood between those mountains, they made us beholden to the land. It connected the whole congregation to the land. But before they crossed over, there were things that they could not be held liable for. After they got into the land, then all the rest of the law became applicable and is now in this, just before going over, is being given to Moses. I'm going to submit to you that everything in the scripture from Genesis to Revelation is a never-ending list of tiny details that happen as a process. It's all process. Yahweh does everything step by step. So, you know, it was supposed to happen now, but you messed up, children of Israel, and now you have to wait 40 years so you can all die off and your children will go into the land. So the process got delayed, and these are the details that Yahweh would have given to them before they entered the land. These additional things that we find in the book of Deuteronomy, along with the blessings and the curses. And then on top of that, before this generation goes into the land, because their fathers sinned against Yahweh and rejected the land, now Moses has to do a history and remind them about the big thing. Don't do the images thing, you know, because that got your fathers into trouble. And so there's additional things that go into the book of Deuteronomy that probably would not have been there had that first generation gone across and come back with, you know, now we have a good land over there, let's go take it. Then they would have gone and Moses would have stood before them and would have said, okay, so when you go into the land, here are the rules for the land, and here's the rules for the priests, and here's the rules for the blessings and the curses. This is how, because every covenant back then, Pharaoh's covenant, Hittite covenant, Amorite covenant, doesn't matter. They all had a list of curses. But guess what? None of them had a list of blessings. So Yahweh was going to be, you know, finish up giving them all the details of his covenant and his laws, statutes, and judgments, and so forth at the 2-year mark. But that got delayed to 38 years later. Okay, so that's why we have all this additional stuff in here in this book of the law. They thwarted the process. But here's the thing about Yahweh. He doesn't, okay, you delay, and he can delay sometimes. And just know that if it gets delayed, it doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when Yahweh decides when's the next time that we're going to do this. So the blessings and the curses come in Deuteronomy that would have been given 2 years into the Exodus if the children of Israel had not rejected the land. And once the congregation was indexed, quote unquote, or meaning connected to the land by the altar built by Joshua, after that, there is no getting away from the impact of our relationship with the land. Being in exile is punishment because we're connected to the land. If you have no connection to something and somebody says, well, you lose that, it's like, well, so what? No, we're connected to the land and it's punishment to be in exile. We are not in the place of our heritage. Being in the land, though, brings responsibilities to the covenant that those people either were not able or refused to live up to because, Moses did not teach them to have a relationship with Yahweh, like the same kind of relationship that he had with Yahweh. He hit the rock. He didn't teach them to speak to the rock. In Deuteronomy 5:32, it says, you shall observe to do, therefore, as Yahweh your God has commanded you. You shall not turn away to the right or to the left. Matthew 7:14 says, because straight is the gate and narrow is the way which leads to life, and few there be that find it. Deuteronomy 5:33. You shall walk in all the ways which Yahweh your God has commanded you that you may live. So there's it's a threat put in, positive terms. Do this so you can live. The converse of that, or the reverse of that, is if you don't do this, you won't live. And that it may be well with you, that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. So again, this is about being able to stay put in the land, to prolong our days there as a congregation, to be there perpetually. Possession of the land, as with all real estate, does not come necessarily without some covenants, conditions, and restrictions. Yahweh's land grant, his royal land grant to Israel, definitely comes with CC&Rs, as we say in real estate, covenants, conditions, and restrictions. So if you want to, you know, if you buy a house in a subdivision and they say don't put up a flag, and then somebody is a patriot, you know, And we've had this in the news. I've seen it a lot. Somebody gets all yay, yay about, oh, you know, Trump or whatever, and he puts a flag on his house, or he puts a Trump sign in his yard, and the subdivision says, we're going to kick you out unless you remove that. And now we have a big court case. And of course, the CCNRs stand. Why? Because you signed on to that covenant when you moved into that subdivision. That's not new with American real estate. Yahweh established that right here in Deuteronomy 5:33, and actually before that. Deuteronomy 6:1. Now, this is the commandment, the statutes and the ordinances, the mitzvah, kolk and mishpat, which Yahweh, your God, commanded you to teach, that you might do them in the land where you go to possess it, that you might fear Yahweh, your God, to keep all his commandments and his statutes, which I commanded you, you and your son and your son's son, all the days of your life, that your days may be prolonged. Now, two verses ago, Yahweh said, you will walk in all the ways which the Lord your God has commanded you, that you may live and that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which you possess. But this time, Moses spells it out for them. It's about the mitzvah, the commandments, not the debar. The debar is a whole other, it's like the outline of all the mitzvah, the commandments, and then the kolk, the statutes, and the mishpat, the judgments and verdicts that Yahweh has made over the last 38 years. Because, you know, he's seen how these people walk. Now he has to tell them, don't walk that way. If you walk that way, you're not going to get to stay in the land. So all of these are given expressly so that they will fear Yahweh. Now, this fear, this word is yare, and it is to cause them to be afraid to break his commandments. Because if they break his commandments, they're going to lose their home, their real estate, everything they've put their life into. You built your house on there, you've got your flocks and your gardens, and you're being protected here, but now you obey me and I'm going to kill you or I'm going to kick you out. He says, if you break the commandments, he says, your life will not be prolonged. And we know that Yahweh later on in the prophets tells them he's going to bring him the sword. He's going to kill him. These commandments, the mitzvah, the kolk and the mishpat, are for us to be afraid to break his commandments. But his people have seemed to mostly have never feared him. They've not understood the magnitude of what his law for them and what his land for them should create in them, fear of breakage. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 1 to 3, I think, should be at the end of chapter 5. Yahweh follows up with telling the people that observing what he commands will make it go well with us. We will increase. And by the way, we're going to see this sudden increase in true heart-circumcised Israelites during the soon-coming tribulation. And that Yahweh Elohim will be fulfilling his promises to our fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he tells us that we are going to his land that is flowing with milk and honey. He is refuting what that former generation said about Egypt flowing with milk and honey. Numbers, chapter 16, verses 13 and 14, when they're saying to Moses, is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of a land that flows with milk and honey? What? To kill us here in this wilderness? Except you make yourself altogether a prince over us? Korah said this. Moreover, you've not brought us into a land that flows with milk and honey, or given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. That is Dathan and Abiram. So They're saying that Egypt flowed with milk and honey, and they're blaming on Moses why Israel is not already in the land. They're not even looking back at those 10 spies that brought back that we can't go over there and take those people. We're not strong enough to do that. No, it's Moses' fault. It's Aaron's fault. It's Yahweh's fault. You didn't keep your promise. We came out of a land flowing with milk and honey, or shall we say garlic and leeks. This end times generation's expectation is that we will get to return in our generation to the land that does flow with milk and honey, that was promised to us and where they tried to go 3,500 years ago, and which we have been out of for 2,700 years, some of us, the Jews, out of it for almost 2,000 years until 1948. What being in exile has shown us is that it ain't fun out here. So let's get into some fear and awe of Yahweh and his word. And let's be afraid to break his commandments. Amen.
This has been Kimberly Rogers Brown from TheMessianicMessage.com. Thank you for listening.